Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. What do you think of historical novels where not only the context, but some of the events and characters are true to historical records, while other events and characters are fictional? What pluses and/or minuses do such novels have compared with completely fictional novels? Well, I have nothing against historical novels if they tell a story, they're well done, they have an interesting character. In other words, the same criteria as applied to fiction. And there are many historical novels which I can like as well as fiction in general. For example, you may not have heard of a book on the Dreyfus trial, the Dreyfus case in late 19th century France, called A Gentleman and a Spy. A Gentleman and a Spy. Unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the author, but I'm sure you can get it off the computer. This is extremely well done. Even though I know what happened to Dreyfus, you are held in suspense all the way through. It's a clash of good and evil. It's everything you'd want in a novel. What he did apparently is stay true to the facts, but angle it in certain ways, not falsify it, to play up the arc and the story. You want another example? What about Gone with the Wind? That was a historical novel set in Civil War America. Plenty of events true to life. So I have nothing against historical novels as such. There's no inherent minus. But there's a problem in most of the ones I know, which is that they pick historical novels because they are fascinated with the background, the details, the different architecture, the different customs, etc. And so the story takes second place to the background. Also, there are some historical novels, Walter Scott is my horrible example, whose characters speak in the dialect appropriate to that time, which to me is just unreadable. But if you take out that, there's a real story, modern speech, I don't see any problem. I do say this, the greatest historical novel and the greatest fiction novel, the second will be better. You can, because fiction is stranger than truth, to reverse the reversal. You can just compare Atlas Shrugged as nonfiction and any historical novel you want. By the fact that it's placed in a historical context, the imagination is lessened, the scope of imagination. And I say this does not make it a negative or less good book. It just means there's a limitation to what it can do of a kind that is not applicable to pure fiction. Now, here's a personal one, and I'm sure the author knows my answer, but to be brief, what is most important to you, work or sex? In other words, what is most important to you, your left eye or your right? I regard both of these as indispensable. To me, each indispensable, and in fact, each implies the other. In work, as you know the objectivist viewpoint, you are pleased, you're happy with yourself, with your ability, with what you brought into the world, and a part of that is the need and desire to to express that in the world, and to have the kind of pleasure that gives you the reality of what you are and what you've done. And vice versa, I can't imagine a life of sex without any work, because what would be the criterion? Your standard would be other people who work and you don't? That would not last you very long. Or other people who don't also? So you're just, what, bums? How long are you going to retain your desire? So if I had a choice of losing some body parts, there's certain things you can infer. There's certain things that I would not tolerate and would prefer not to live at all without them. You, I'm sure, can figure it out. I am a young objectivist, very much confused about my personal values and irrational premises. I think that I love a man, or that I ought to, because his values align with mine and we both seek to achieve the same standard for life. Now, you're on the wrong track completely. And as soon as you say, I ought to love this man, you are outside the realm of love. Love is a response to a certain kind of value which the other person has, which he embodies, which you have, something fundamental and essential to your whole way of living, which you embrace because you find it in him. Now, the way you're describing it, his values align with mine. So in other words, you can list a bunch of objectivist virtues and he can list them. And since they're the same, you should fall in love with him. That is 100% false. You fall in love with a character that you meet and respond to. And presumably it'll be with values that you hold. But the fact that you have the same values has nothing to do with you ought to love the person. That would mean otherwise every objectivist should love every other one. Now, you go on, and yet I am attracted only to women and am, in fact, in a homosexual relationship. And then you say, we share in common a higher standard of achievement for values and intellectual ability. Oh, and then she says that she's better in that than the other one. So where should she go? Well, as you presented, it's the same issue here. You are saying ability to achieve or intellectual development, if we share those, we should be in love. And if I'm better, I should break off with her. And it's the same thing as you were saying about the man. The question is, when you react to her, when you're with her, do you respond to her? Does the fact that she has got less achievement, does that bother you? Not bother you as a duty, but bother you because you feel she isn't you, she's not that close to you. But per se, you do not judge love by IQ. So that is not a criterion. It sounds to me like you have a man you don't love and a woman that you do, but you think you should love the man and shouldn't the woman. And I think you have to forget all those shoulds, including the man and woman should. Objectivism gives no criticism of gay or straight. So either one, whichever you choose. But what you have to do is identify your real, what we call sense of life response, and to which one it is. And if you want my opinion, just reading between the lines, you are more in love with the woman than the man. But I could be, completely wrong. I have a former friend who is accused, he goes on to say, validly, the police have found him, accused of attempting first-degree premeditated murder of his ex-wife. My problem is this. Am I morally correct in disowning such a person? Or should I try to redeem him? His intent in an email later discovered by police was a murder-suicide. I have a very positive past with this man, and it has destroyed a part of me, knowing that he wanted to make orphans of his three very young children. Any advice would help. He was a very positive past, but we can say as a general rule that past value is trumped by present atrocity. If you are talking about murder or premeditated murder, let alone of his three kids, what is it that you can put against it and say, gee, I'm torn? No form of friendship can possibly validate that. I can't imagine whatever you got from this man. Also, he must have been capable of this when you had your positive past, and you must have been able to detect it in some way, because he couldn't go from, you know, being normal and happy and suddenly mass murder. You have to concretize. What is it in him that makes him a killer? And what is it in your experience that you judge as very positive? Now you say you're going to redeem him. How are you going to redeem him? How are you going to make this character better? Out of the question, it's impossible. How could you ever even forgive him? If he says, oh, I'll never do it again, would you ever believe him? So my advice to you in relation to this man is run. Don't speak to him. Don't go to court. Get out of his life and away fast as possible. It is my understanding that the basis for man's rights is derived from his capacity to reason. If it is discovered through scientific research that animals, or at least some species of animals, in fact possess the capacity to reason at some level, that they do not operate merely on the automatic perceptual level, would there then be a valid justification for extending to those animals the basic right to life that we extend to other humans? Rights are based on reason. So if an alarm clock was able to reason, it would have rights, and you couldn't, you know, throw it around. But this is, if you'll excuse me and not take offense, this is BS, this question. You know, they can teach apes to respond to certain stimuli in certain ways, on the order of what we teach dog tricks, but better and more complex. That has nothing to do with human conceptual faculty, which is what we call reason. Number one, and the first crucial difference, is man survives by his conceptual faculty. It is not a trick taught him by somebody else, a little game out of context. He lives or dies by the capacity of thought. There is no animal that does that, no matter how Harvard or any other place has conditioned them. And that leads to another crucial difference. If we survive by conceptual integration, we are forced, we are going to have to integrate the whole world that we deal with. So we are going to have vast range of concepts which are wider and wider. Freedom, justice, furniture, identity, etc. Now, no animal has anything remotely like that. If they did, you could talk to them about the nature of the universe, what do they think of Kant's critique, etc. Then they would be a man in an ape class. But this idea that because they can be taught some tricks, even surprising tricks, means nothing until you show that they're able to have broad concepts and use them as the necessity of their survival. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.